show that they had, and it was the inventor or the creator of a certain armor that he had made for the movie Night at the Museum. I think some of you have seen that movie, Night at the Museum. So the Roman soldiers that are in there. Now in the movie, the Roman soldiers are little men, tiny little men, action figures, you know, and that come to life at night. And anyways, he obviously had to make them full scale because you don't find actors that are this big in real life. And so he created this, you know, Roman armor replica, and trying to get some extra cash. Hey, this is what was used in the movie, and I'd like to go ahead and sell what I made. The actual, one of the main actors, I think it's Coogan, Steve Coogan, he wore it, and so he's offering this to sell it in. I'll see if this works with the clicker. I guess I need to turn it on. No, I got it. Maybe. Nope. Don't want to do that. Okay. I'll just have you do it then maybe. Or did I do that? Or you? I did. Okay. So you see the armor there. That's the actual armor to the left. But he says, you know, we may be small, but our hearts are large, metaphorically speaking. So they were kind of tiny little guys. But now in real life, you know, this is obviously armor war in a movie, but in real life, if you are a soldier, you are not going to sell your armor. It is too valuable, especially if you believe that you have upcoming battles. Maybe you're retired. I don't know, you know, what age an actual soldier would retire, but you know, if you believe that you're going to have battles in the future, you are not going to sell your armor. As a Christian, there is the realization that you never retire from the battle that you're in. As a Christian, you are always going to have future battles. Remember the hymn that we all remember, the Onward Christian Soldiers. We are Christian soldiers. We are in a battle. And that's the realization. You know, we are in a battle, and we will be in a battle against the enemy, against our foe, until the return of Jesus Christ. And at that point, it'll be a different battle that will be fought. But a question for our youth here today, for anyone for that matter, but specifically I'll direct this question to our youth. When does the battle start? When does the battle start? Does it start, you know, whenever you become baptized, and up until that point, no battles that you're fighting as a youth? Satan just kind of leaves you alone. You don't have to fight any battles at a young age. Hey, I'm not baptized yet, right? Or maybe this is just mom and dad's religion, their church, so I'm out of the fight. Is that the way it goes? You know, when does this start for our youth? Another question would be those who are older. Does the battle stop whenever you get older? You know, I've heard stories of individuals who have had to go into nursing homes, and they said the things that you hear from some of the older individuals that are in there, just awful, you know. Does the battle stop when you're older too? We know that young or old, Satan will attack your heart. He will attack your heart and mind. We cannot be fooled. We cannot be naive. We must realize that we are in a battle. And sometimes it's whenever we feel like, well, maybe I'm not in a battle, that's a great opportunity for him to attack. It's when we might let our guard down, or, you know, feel like maybe we're not in a battle. We always want to be on guard. We want to recognize that we are in a battle. We never want to sell our spiritual armor, so to speak, by giving in to one of the gifts that Satan wants to offer you. So that you will take off your armor and give it up, turn it in. It's when you let your guard down, when you lower your defenses, that an attack could be detrimental, and it could be a fatal attack. So when you believe that you're not in a battle, that makes you very vulnerable. We know we are to be vigilant in our efforts, diligent, on guard, watchful in the way we live our lives, aware of where Satan could attack. And it's whenever we are not watchful, or when we kind of let our guard down, let our defenses down, that Satan can really make an impact. We know of the story of the Trojan horse with the Trojan War for the city of Troy. Now, historians unanimously agree that this was not a true story. It didn't actually happen. It was more of a propaganda story. But we know how the story goes. The Greeks made the gift, if you will, of the wooden horse. It was appealing, a gift. They went into the city of Troy, into the heart of the city, and at night they came out and took over the city. That is a story, you know, but the city of Troy was gullible. They let the enemy directly in. They let their guard down. They didn't feel like it was an attack. It wasn't a part of the battling, and that was their downfall. And we know that even though the story of the Trojan horse may have been a myth, may have been a legend, the battle that we are in is not a myth. It's not a legend. It's true. We do battle a real enemy, and we must recognize what Satan is offering, the gifts, the attacks. He's going to tailor those gifts and attacks, whatever your heart desires, and there may be a certain thing that we would gravitate or a certain sin that we're battling. And he's going to tailor that Roman horse, if you will, to whatever you would like, to where maybe you would let that guard down and say, you know what, I'm going to let my guard down just for this. Or, you know, just for this thing, I'll go ahead and take off my breastplate of righteousness. Here we have a pizza guy here. So we think, you know, Satan is going to attack however he can, and whatever your weakness is. The guy says, it's just in case they won't let the horse in. It has the wooden pizza guy coming in. So whatever, you know, whatever your downfall could be, you know that that's the weakness. He's going to attack where you're weak. He's hopefully he'll get you to let your guard down so that he can attack. We always want to make sure that our defenses are strong, that the gates are closed. And when it comes to letting sin into our life, and we want to make sure that our defenses are very strong. I like to make sure that the fence is always closed in our backyard. We have a little wooded area, and you never know what kind of critters will get back there. But it seems like if I have ever let the door open, that next morning there's something back there. Had an armadillo that was back there, and I think they can cause or bring leprosy. So it's like, make sure the gate is closed. Would it be wise to, even just for today, you come here for services, but you leave the back door open, just the back door, leave it wide open. Would you trust that nothing would be inside the house when you return? And we had in our neighborhood, not a few months ago, one of our neighbors. Well, it was fire trucks that showed up, and police officer, we wondered what was going on, and kind of a big commotion at one person's house. Didn't know what happened, but as it turned out, they didn't realize they left their back door open for a pretty good amount of time. And so whenever they came back, what was in the closet was a red fox. And they did not want that red fox to be there. How would you like to open up the closet door, and here's this red fox? So you think, you know, things, if you open the door, there's going to be unwanted visitors. You know, I can only imagine if we left our back door open, what we would find. We hear the coyotes howling at night. I have seen red fox, run behind our backyard, around the fence. They're beautiful, but I don't want to come home to one in my down the basement. We want to be vigilant in all that we do. But what if you lived in lion country? What if you lived in lion country and, you know, would you leave the back door open and a big hunk of raw meat on the counter? You know, we think about how Satan is described as our enemy. He is a merciless enemy who will attack. He's vicious. And we definitely do not want to leave the door open for our enemy, this roaring lion, seeking to devour us, to attack us. 1 Peter 5 and verse 8.
1 Peter 5 and verse 8, be sober, be vigilant. And we are to be watchful. We are to be on guard. We're not to leave the door wide open. Hey, whatever, we don't really care. Maybe we're not really even in a battle anyways. Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. Resist him steadfast in the faith. You think about our marching orders. You know, we are not only to keep a close lock on our door, which would be a part of the door of our mind, the door of our heart, is what I'm trying to say. But we are to actually proactively, we are to resist. We are to, you know, battle, fight back. We are to resist. We are to try to get away from his attacks. We are to resist so that he will flee. You are in a battle, and your enemy, your adversary, is a lion seeking to devour you. Seeking to devour you. If you knew your enemy was actively pursuing you to leave the gate unlocked and open, would you do that? Of course not. You want to strengthen the walls of defense. You want to resist. But your adversary would love to have direct access to your heart and mind. He would love to have, you know, take the breastplate of righteousness off and I have a free shot at that, at your heart and mind. He would love no resistance. He would love to have some fatal blows in there. But it takes diligent effort to resist. And you have your marching orders. They are to resist. You are to defend and strengthen your resistance. James 5 and verse 4. James 4 and verse 6. I don't know where I got 5. James 4 and verse 6. But he gives more grace. Therefore, he says, God resists the proud. Now, we are to resist Satan the devil and that pride that he has, the attitudes, mindset of Satan, the temptations that he gives. And God, he resists the proud. We are to resist prideful thoughts, self-will. But God resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Therefore, submit to God. That's the first step to resisting the devil. Submit to God and resist the devil. So just as God resists the proud, we are to resist that prideful being and resist him in what we do. And he will flee from you. We are to resist. We must be diligent to resist the pulls of this world. We resist the wiles of the devil. You must resist your enemy, that roaring lion. So how do we resist? How do you resist the devil and put up a fight? And so much of that resistance has to do with the armor that we put on, the armor of God. And in case you haven't figured out what I'd like to focus in on, and in case you missed the first slide that said the breastplate of righteousness, that is what I would like to focus on today, because this is a major part of resisting the devil, to have the breastplate of righteousness. Righteous actions, righteous mindset, righteousness is a part of resisting and having defense toward this evil being. Ephesians 6 and verse 10. As we kind of lay the groundwork, and then we'll get into some of the details. Ephesians 6, and starting in verse 10. Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord, and in the power of his might, put on the whole armor of God, that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. To be able to resist, to be able to defend, to be able to hold our ground in this battle, in this war that we are in. For we do not wrestle with flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places. Therefore, take up the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand. Again, we're talking about resisting. As a major part, we resist the devil and he will flee. We're talking about withstanding the attacks, to resist. We must have the armor on. And so we may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand. Stand therefore, having girded your waist with truth, having put on the breastplate of righteousness. And this is what I would like to focus on today, is that breastplate of righteousness. You think about what it guards, a specific part of your body. We know the breastplate of righteousness guards your toes, right? Guards your heart and the vital, your head, your heart. How important is that helmet? Would you ever want to take off the helmet in a battle? Would you ever want to take off that breastplate? Everything else you have on covered, but your heart is exposed in a hand-to-hand combat type of battle. Adam Clark's commentary says the following: as the breastplate defends the heart and lungs and all those vital functionaries that are contained in what is called the region of the thorax, so this righteousness defends everything on which the man's spiritual existence depends. How important is righteousness to you and I? Very, very important. Very, very important. It is spiritual life or death. A vital part to defend a potentially fatal blows to the heart. That's the thing. If he can get to your heart on certain things and create a stronghold on certain sin, right at the heart, right at the core, it could be fatal blow. Obedience to the commandments of God and obedience to his way of life, righteousness. We must have that armor of righteousness on. If you are defining what righteousness is, you can jot this scripture down. Psalm 119 and verse 172, we're told, "My tongue shall speak of your word, for all your commandments are righteousness." All your commandments are righteousness. And you think about the new covenant and how God's law is being written in your heart and mind. That is a process. There's a certain depth of understanding, a certain level of understanding in keeping God's law. But maybe you could take the analogy a little further. You could think about the thickness of the breastplate of righteousness. As there's a certain amount of depth and understanding, and as God's law is being written in your heart and mind with a further depth, maybe the thickness of that armor is getting, maybe it's getting thicker and thicker. But we never want to take that armor off. That is what could be detrimental. We always want to strive to be righteous in all things. Is there ever a good time to take off that armor? If you're in a hand-to-hand combat, would you ever want to take off that armor? I'll break it down a little bit, a more generic example. But these baseball players for, let's say, Kansas City Royals, or starting pitcher, they can throw upward to almost 100 miles an hour, throw a baseball. And if you've ever seen a ball coming at that speed in such a short amount of time, it's unbelievable. It's just a split second to react. One particular 12-year-old, he's throwing in the 80s. Okay, so these little 12-year-olds getting up there, and this guy is throwing over 80 miles an hour. And the distance is actually shorter than the pros, so they said it's the equivalency of facing a 112-mile-an-hour fastball. These little 12-year-olds are up there, 112-mile-an-hour, and they had this video of this guy pitching, and he could also make the ball move and curve. I would not want to be up there facing that. Now, how would you like to be a catcher behind there? And you think, give me some gear, and maybe I'll try to catch the ball. But who in their right mind would play baseball with somebody and not have any protective gear on? I'll just do it. I'll wing it. I got my old trusty glove from way back. Just bring me the heat. who's going to do that? That's in baseball. The thing that Satan, the devil, is throwing your way is much more dangerous than a curveball from a 12-year-old. The things that he is throwing at us daily, the thoughts, our mind, and what he wants into our heart to sink in, is much more dangerous. But we would not, nobody in their right mind would get behind that plate and try to catch a ball, the 112-mile-an-hour ball coming at you. without some protective gear on. The battle that we face, we do not want to take that breastplate of righteousness off. Psalm 106 and verse 3, is there ever a good time to remove that armor? Just for this or that, just a little small thing, I'll just go ahead and kind of put that down for now. I've got something I really would rather do. I know it's probably not right exactly, but just for this, no big deal. Just put it off for just a second. Psalm 106 and verse 3. Is there ever a good time to take the breastplate of righteousness off? Psalm 106 and verse 3. Blessed are those who keep justice, and he who does righteousness at all times. Well, there's never a good time to take off that breastplate of righteousness. That is when we are vulnerable. That is when we're opening the gates up for an attack from Satan, the devil, from the enemy, like that horse allowed into the heart of the city. When you let that guard down, now you have issues. And the thing is, we let our guard down for just a little bit. It could be a quick thought that's being broadcast. We're caught off guard. A situation to conform, wrong behavior, whatever it is. Do we stand firm? Do we yield? Do we take the breastplate of righteousness off just for this one time? Or do we keep it tightly cinched close to us, protecting our heart? Proverbs 4 and verse 20. Proverbs 4 and starting in verse 20. My son, give attention to my words. Incline your ear to my sayings. Do not let them depart from your eyes. Keep them in the midst of your heart, for they are life to those who find them and health to all their flesh. Keep your heart with all diligence, for out of it springs the issues of life. Keep your heart with all diligence. Common English Bible translation says, more than anything you guard, protect your mind, for life flows from it. You know, what's in your heart and mind comes out in our actions, and we must protect what goes into our heart and mind. Now, recently, I know I spent quite a bit of time in the book of Nehemiah here in a couple of sermons previously. But, you know, it is such a good example of being diligent to resist. We know that Nehemiah was faced with trying to build the walls. Here was a very vulnerable city of Jerusalem. The walls were down. And there we go. And, you know, he's going to try to build the walls, and that's the goal. And guess what? You know, the enemies did not like that. I think it's interesting the progression within chapter 4 of Nehemiah. The enemies first mocked their effort. There was first a mocking going on. Well, don't even try. What do you think you're going to do? You think you can get strong? Think you can build a defense against this? Don't even try. And then when he saw that their efforts were going somewhat well, they were being diligent, they were continuing. You know, at first they mocked, they said, that was interesting, he said a fox. You know, a little fox could come around and knock the wall down. It's weak. You don't even try to build. And then after that, after you were diligent, then they just got downright angry. You think about our enemy. You know, if we try to resist, he does not want you to resist. He's going to be angry. And then when that didn't deter them, and they continued to build, and it was becoming stronger, the walls were becoming stronger, the holes were filled in, then the threats came, all-out attack. You know, if you keep this up, we are going to attack you. So what was Nehemiah's response? It was, well, we're going to have our defense, we're going to defend, and we're going to work. We're going to have people build at this time. We're going to have the sword in one hand. We're going to, you know, we're going to build with the other. You know, that has to be our mindset. We're not going to give up, and we're going to continue to build. I just thought that was a very, very good picture. You know, where you have the guy laying mortar in one hand and you have the sword in the other. You know, that has to be our mindset that, you know, as we battle the foe that we face. You know, the one that first mocks your effort, And when he sees you're trying, he wants to discourage. He wants you to be down. He wants you to give up. He wants you to quit. He was just outright angry if you try to press forward and be encouraged and keep fighting against those attacks. And the attacks from Satan the devil, it's not just temptation. It can be to discourage, to wear you out. You know, he's going to try to wear out the saints. He wants you to be discouraged, to give up, quit, don't persevere, quit moving forward. We must continue to build and defend. Nehemiah 4 in verse 15. Nehemiah 4 and verse 15. And it happened when our enemies heard that it was known to us that God had brought their plot to nothing, that all of us returned to the wall, everyone to his work. So it was from that time on that half my servants worked on constructions while the other half held the spears and shields and bows and wore armor. And the leaders were behind all the house of Judah. Those who built on the wall and those who carried burdens loaded themselves so that with one hand they worked at construction, with the other hand held a weapon. Now, it's interesting, we keep reading, I won't go on, but you get the point. You know, to wear your armor, get to work, and do the work of God. That is what we are to do. So for the rest of the time, I wanted to lay the groundwork down, how important it is to have that armor on, that breastplate of righteousness. And I want to look at some of the building blocks, because we are laying some blocks down. We are building, and we are trying to build with righteousness. Holy, righteous character is what we are striving to build. And I want to look at the building process, part of some details in the building process that will help us to build righteously. First point, are you building with others who have their breastplate on? Are you building with others who have their breastplate on? Who are you building with? It matters. Who are we, is it iron sharpening iron? Whose camp are you in? Are you spending a lot of time with others or builders who have their armor on, or with those who are without? And I think this one probably applies more so to the youth that are here, because they're faced with a lot of peer pressure, or, you know, sometimes it's hard to have the right balance with school friends, worldly friends, and how much time you spend with one another. And but there's always the thought, hey, I can be righteous, I can be strong, even though my friends are not. And it's always not true. It's always going to, you'll always be the one that will kind of go along with those who don't have that breastplate on. If you're trying to keep yours on and everybody else doesn't, it's going to be much easier. You know what? I've walked the fence. When you're walking the fence, too, that's, you're really not walking the fence. You know, you're actually on the other side. But, you know, it's going to be easier to loosen that breastplate of righteousness and put it to the side. And that's what we're told here in Proverbs 12 and verse 26. Proverbs 12 and verse 26. The righteous, and we're talking about keeping that breastplate of righteousness on, the righteous should choose his friends carefully, for the way of the wicked leads them astray. The way of the wicked will lead one astray. So that choice comes, who your friends are, it starts long before you're already in that group. You have to make the choices of who you're going to spend your time with, and the righteous should choose their friends carefully. It is much easier to make a wrong decision around the wrong crowd. Don't let the unrighteous in your camp, so to speak. And you do have the youth here. You do have a holy calling. You have been set apart by God, and you have you want to stay within your camp. You have a holy calling. So here we have Buckingham Palace. So you have, you know, royalty there, and, you know, you are a part of the royal family. You know, they're not just going to let anybody into their camp. Somebody come by, hey, I want to talk to the queen today. Is she in? No, you're not getting in. Those gates are guarded.
And, you know, you have to think about, you are a part of the royal family. You have been set apart by God himself. So you must stay in your camp. Stay in your camp. Build with those who are building. Iron sharpening iron. Who is in your camp? Where do you belong? Psalm 100 and verse 1. Where do we belong? Psalm 100 in verse 1. We belong in God's courts, his camp. We're a part of his family. Truly are a family here. Make a joyful shout to the Lord, all you lands. Serve the Lord with gladness. Come before his presence with singing. Know that the Lord, he is God. It is he who has made us and not we ourselves. We are his people and the sheep of his pasture. So we want to stay in his pasture, in his camp. Enter into his gates with thanksgiving and into his courts with praise. Be thankful to him and bless his name, for the Lord is good. His mercy is everlasting and his truth endures to all generations. You belong with God's people in his house, in his courts. And each Sabbath, you're here. When we fellowship with one another outside, it is truly a wonderful thing. It is a blessing. And it was very encouraging going to the Winter Family Weekend. I wish you all could have been there. It was very encouraging. It was very edifying. And, you know, we get a survey afterwards. And it was asking about what did you enjoy the most? I would be curious to know what the response was. We had all these different activities, but the highlight for me and our family, it was the fellowship. It was being with one another. It was the unity. And it was, you know, I remember just being in the hotel room in the evening, and it was just, there was just a joy. It was like a presence almost. Like there was just, you know, there's the unity of God's Spirit, and that that fellowship is very uplifting. And it was a little different when we arrived early. And we were there, and we were kind of the only ones there. And then afterwards, we were the only ones there, basically, at the Galt House. You know, many had left. And we were very uplifted and encouraged, though, during that time. But it was different before we got there and after, you know. Very similar to the Feast of Tabernacles. And we all know what we're talking about. But again, speaking of being righteous, keeping on that breastplate of righteousness, we need to be around one another. That is what we are yoked to. That's what we're tied to. It's where our fellowship belongs. And this is an interesting scripture to consider along the lines of keeping the breastplate of righteousness on. 2 Corinthians 6 and verse 14. 2 Corinthians 6 and verse 14. Do not be unequally yoked together with unbelievers. For what fellowship has righteousness with lawlessness? That breaks it down pretty clear. What fellowship has righteousness with lawlessness? And what communion has light with darkness? Or what accord has Christ with Belial? That's another name for Satan. It means worthless or wicked, but it's also a name of Satan. It really gets to the heart of it. We are not to be yoked with the world. We're not to be yoked to Satan, the devil. We are to be yoked to God's way of life, righteousness, and with the fellowship of Christ. The nation of Israel was to be an example to the other nations. They were not to be yoked to the other nations. That is because those other nations were worshiping a false god. They had false gods, and if they were to yoke to that other nation, they'd be yoked to that way of life. They'd be yoked to that same worship, really, of Satan the devil. And there was a protection that was given in the instructions to be separate, to be that example, to be that holy nation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation. They were not to mix and yield with those other nations who were worshiping false gods, the pagan customs. You know, so here we are today, and we're part of a royal priesthood. We are a holy people. We've been set apart. And we are to do our diligence to help protect the body. Collectively, as a group, the individual responsibilities and the individual actions that we make
help to strengthen collectively the body. So our personal response, our personal actions really do matter. And again, addressing the youth here, really your actions really do affect your family, and you can really be a part of that defense for your family within your family's gates, a protective. Or you can let wrong things into the family. Or this is Psalm 127. I'll let it speak for itself, and as I'm trying to explain without the context of the scripture, but Psalm 127 and verse 1. Psalm 127 and starting in verse 1. Unless the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain who build it. So we're all a part of the builders. We do our best. We do our due diligence. But God is the one who's blessing our efforts. Unless the Lord guards the city, the watchmen stay awake in vain. That doesn't mean that we don't need watchmen. It doesn't mean that we don't need builders. It just means that we have to have God's blessing on top of the actions that we have. It is vain for you to rise up early, to sit up late, to eat the bread of sorrows, for so he gives his beloved sleep. Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord. You're part of God's inheritance. You've been set apart by God. The fruit of the womb is a reward. And that's how the children are described in the family. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior, so are the children of one's youth. Happy is the man who has his quiver full of them. They shall not be ashamed, but they shall speak with their enemies in the gate. You know, children are described as helpers, arrows. Expositor's commentary says, the psalmist likens the children of one's youth to arrows. As the arrows protect the warrior, so the godly need not be afraid when blessed with sons. If there is a household full of children, they are on the same page with the father and the mother, and they are setting the good example. They are like those arrows in a warrior's hand. A house full of children striving to obey will serve as protection against the wrong pulls of society. And just the opposite can also apply. If one allows certain things into the house, it can affect the family in a detrimental way. The children in a household do affect the family and can help to protect in a way by not adapting to wrong, sinful culture, but to uphold godly values. Even as children in the household, you play a vital role in keeping evil out. You have a holy calling. We'll go on to the next point. Don't go to battle with loose armor. Don't go into battle with loose armor on. Now, this particular picture is, trying to illustrate King David. We know before he went to Goliath, he tries on the armor. It's loose. His baggage too big. He says, thanks, but do you have anything in a 32 slim? It was loose. It wasn't fitting. It wasn't right. And David said, this is worthless. I can't use this. And he went to battle without it. And, I'd like to bring up the point. If we have loose armor on, if we're loosening our armor because of sin, just small sin, just a little bit of sin. Well, I know this isn't right, but just loosening the armor. You're not going to be an effective warrior for God. You cannot fight the battles with loose armor on. Is there anything that you do that will cause you to loosen your armor? Is there anything that we should allow to loosen our armor? If we loosen our armor, it's eventually going to lead to taking off our armor. You can call it the slippery slope to sin. There are some situations that we must outright flee. Now you think about Joseph and Potiphar's wife. He had to outright run away from the seductions that she had. There are some situations you must completely get away from. Otherwise, it is like we're loosening that armor just a little bit, just a couple of strings loosening the back it's okay. Eventually, that armor is going to fall off. Again, you think about Samson and Delilah. Boy, she worked on him, worked on him. And he, you know, well, just a little bit. I'll go ahead and loosen the armor. Eventually, it was his own demise. 2 Timothy 2 and verse 22 says, "Flee also youthful lusts, but pursue righteousness, faith, love, peace, and those who call on the Lord out of a pure heart." Pursue righteousness. Flee youthful lusts. Some situations we have to completely flee. Otherwise, it's like we're just trying to loosen the armor just a little bit. It's the slippery slope to sin. And if there was a, say there was a very icy, cold, bitter, icy water down at the very bottom of a hill and just had a little bit of icy rain, you had a very slippery slope going down, and then at the very bottom was ice water, you know, very bitter cold water. Would you try walking the slippery slope? You know, nobody wants to fall into that bitter cold water. We can call that regret. Jackie Joyner Kersee once said, "It is better to look ahead and prepare than to look back and regret." There is that slippery slope that we have to stay away from, the slippery slope of sin. And of course, Satan is going to dangle the carrot. He's going to try to get you to walk to that slippery slope, knowing that once you're there, it's just a ride down to the bottom into that bitter, cold water of regret. The other day, I was moving an old refrigerator that was out in the garage. I was going to have to put it out by the road, but right in front of it was a skateboard, Steven's skateboard that he has, and he's got all the protective gear and the elbow pads, and he does pretty well with it. And when I was younger, I had my own skateboard as well. I was about 9, 10, so you know, I'm 41 now, so whatever, you do the math, over 30 years ago. But I looked down at the skateboard. I know you're thinking I stepped on it, rolled back, and fell. But no, I just looked at it, and I picked it up. I thought, man, this skateboard is built so much better than my skateboard was when I was growing up. So I was a little enticed by this skateboard, kind of played with the wheels a little bit. So smooth, much better. I had these big, bulky wheels and a big pad on the back. I think Snoopy was on the bottom or something, you know. And Cool Joe or something, I don't know. But you know, if I looked at it, I was just, this is a nice skateboard. And the trucks are nice and solid. And I'll just take it out. Got to the edge of my driveway. I thought, I'll just step on it just for a minute. You know, just kind of see how it goes. So got on there and just kind of pivoted a little bit to the right. And down the driveway I go. It started off kind of slow. I'm like, I don't know why how I even got to this situation, you know. And so I'm kind of coasting a little bit. And then because I didn't get off quickly when I was going slow, once I hit halfway down the driveway, now I was going too fast to even jump off. And it was like, I'm going to hit the lip of this driveway, and I'm just preparing for impact. So I hit the lip of the driveway, and Katie, fortunately, she stepped out just in time to see all of this, and I'm just glad she didn't have her phone, put it on Facebook or something, you know. But she steps out, she sees me, I'm going halfway, like, what are you doing? Going halfway down the hill, I hit that lip, and I just roll like a stunt double on the concrete. I think, I don't know if you've seen some of the Kevin James movies where he does his own stunts. Yeah, that was me. And, you know, just looked around when I jumped up. And my neighbor, he was in his car in the driveway. And I just kind of acted like I meant to do it. Picked up the board, went inside, and hit the garage door button. Let it go down. Oh, regret. Why did I even step on the skateboard? I have to think there had to be a reason for this, and maybe it was just so I could share with everybody, don't step on the skateboard. You know, but you know, that's the way it works. There's the enticement, and there's my own desire. I kind of wanted to ride the skateboard again like I did 30 years ago. Yeah, but there was the regret, and then once you get on that ride, it's almost impossible to get up. You know, we must think about that with our actions. There's some things we just have to keep the door closed on completely. wrong movies, you know, music, phone apps, video games, certain things we don't even want to let into our mind, not even a little bit. I think we all probably saw the Friday Night Live from Mr. Nathan Willoughby, but it was a great example of how he had that little drop of black dye, he put it in the water. I thought it was interesting how much water it took to flush out that color and the dye from the water. I thought that was a very interesting point. We want to be careful. Don't even allow a little drop of wrong entertainment into our hearts and minds. We can become jaded. We don't want to let wrong things into our heart and mind. We'll go on to the final point. Well, I skipped a slide. I'll move on to the... All right, and that is, do not let wrong attitudes pass your gate. When you think about defending, you think about the right, keeping that breastplate of righteousness on. So many times we are tested with how we will respond and what our attitude will be to certain situations. And what we, it's kind of like, are you, somebody has offended you and now you're taking off the gloves. You know, now it's time to get real. Well, you think, is there ever a time, I'm offended. I'm taking off my breastplate of righteousness. Now for this situation, it's okay. I'm going to take that off and now I'm going to let you have it. Well, what we don't realize is that we are vulnerable ourselves. Certain attitudes that will cause us to want to take off that breastplate of righteousness, it's pride, it's self-righteousness. Sometimes it's insecurities where we go down a certain road and now we create enemies that aren't really our enemies. And we battle the mind. Victim mentality, self-pity, thinking highly of ourselves, feeling sorry for ourselves. Why isn't this person treating me the way I deserve to be treated? Well, and we started going down that road, we're taking that breastplate of righteousness off. Bitterness, hatred. This is the attitude of Satan, the devil. Philippians 4 and verse 5. Philippians 4 and verse 5. And this is something we all have to battle. Nobody's excluded on this because, really it's so much of what he does as the prince of the power of the air. He attacks your heart and mind. He wants you to go down a road. If he can get one to latch on to bitterness, sometimes it's almost impossible to get away from without that true repentance. There must be that repentance. But it leads to other emotions as really can have a stronghold. Philippians 4 and verse 5. Let your gentleness be known to all men. The Lord is at hand. Be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. You think about having that right, thankful attitude. That is a good mindset to be in. That's like keeping that breastplate of righteousness close and cinched up tight. Thankfulness, well, that will really help to guard our hearts. And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding. If we have this right attitude with thanksgiving, and the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus. Talk about the breastplate of righteousness, guarding your heart and mind, a thankful attitude. We must have that. We don't want to go down that road of self-pity. Woe is me. Why are they not doing this? I thought they would communicate more with me. Why didn't they? Whatever it is, there's many situations and many different angles that he uses to get to our mind. We must meditate on right thoughts, meditate on things that are uplifting. Verse 8, finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of a good report, if there is any virtue, if there is anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. These things which you have learned and received and heard and saw in me, these do, and the God of peace will be with you. You will keep that breastplate of righteousness on. Those other thoughts can lead to some very dangerous emotions, anger being one of them, which is, this is a major gateway for Satan to attack our heart, the very core of ourselves, that anger, if that's in our heart, we have taken that breastplate of righteousness off. And we must control the emotions and not let the emotions control us. One final scripture to conclude. We'll turn to Genesis 4 and verse 3. You think about, the breastplate of righteousness. Cain had the opportunity to have it on. He took it off. He had the choice too. If you do well, if you do well, will you not be accepted? And he chose to take off that breastplate of righteousness. Didn't really have it on to begin with when he was talking to him. He needed to put it back on or have it. But Genesis 4 and verse 3. You can't go down that road. We can't let the emotions control us. We must control the emotions. Self-control, that being a fruit of God's Spirit. Genesis 4 and verse 3. And in the process of time, it came to pass that Cain brought an offering of the fruit of the ground to the Lord. Abel also brought of the firstborn of the flock and of their fat. And the Lord respected Abel and his offering, but he did not respect Cain and his offering. And Cain was very angry. He was very angry. And his countenance fell. Why is that accepted? Mine's not. Woe is me. Why? That's not fair. That's not right. You're just having favors. Whatever it is. He got angry. Very angry. So the Lord said to Cain, "Why are you angry? And why has your countenance fallen? If you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin lies at the door." You think about that in all of our actions when it comes to righteousness. Sin is outside the door. If we take that breastplate of righteousness, it's like opening up the gates and letting Satan's desire in. Sin lies at the door, and its desire is for you. It wants you. It's like it's that lion seeking whom he may devour. But you should rule over it. We are to rule over sin. We are to keep that breastplate of righteousness on. A close friend of mine in eighth grade, he found a note on the floor in gym class. He found a little note, didn't know what it was, and he just started reading it. He didn't know that it was somebody else had written it, another one of the boys, and it was a love letter to somebody. So he starts reading it out loud and kind of chuckling, "What is this?" And before you know it, he had come up behind him, took his head, and smashed it up against a brick wall. Anger ruled. What he felt, that's not right. This is not right what somebody is doing. And so he had the right to do whatever he wanted to do. When you give in to anger, you're taking off the breastplate of righteousness. And Satan can work with anger. He does work with anger so much. It's the spirit of murder. We can't risk taking off the breastplate of righteousness. There's only one time it's taken. They've made one mistake out of anger. They've got worked up so much, and before you know it, they're in prison for the rest of their lives. Anger is the spirit of murder. We must resist the devil. He wants a direct shot to your heart. We must keep the breastplate of righteousness on. So I hope that this has helped in recognizing the need to guard our heart and mind to resist against the enemy. A major way to resist Satan and to defend and to stand your ground is to have that breastplate of righteousness on. You are in a battle. He wants to attack your heart and mind. And you need God's protective armor. You do not want to leave your heart unguarded. So remember to build a wall of righteousness, lock the gate, and guard your heart. Build with the breastplate of righteousness on.